So this sentence kept popping into my head this week, and it was that the phrase is, the world is so loud. It just seems like the world is screaming right now. There's so much going on, and we have to acknowledge it. And, you know, the destruction in Gaza, the other wars and violence around the world, and Ukraine and Congo and Myanmar and Sudan, and the stuff happening here, the homelessness that's going on, and the climate change, and the epidemic of mass shootings that happen seemingly on a daily basis, and inflation, economic disparities, racial injustice, white supremacy, so much hatred that's becoming mainstream, coming out of the shadow, so to speak. And I feel that every few weeks I recite this same litany, but because it's like there and we're all dealing with it, we're all experiencing these things to a greater or lesser degree, and it has an impact on us. So I think it's important to acknowledge this. And so there's the world stuff that's happening, and then there's also our personal experiences. We're all going through life and dealing with those moments. And I've heard a lot of stuff this week. People, I know, I have a friend who passed away suddenly the other day, quite unexpectedly, and then somebody else shared a very similar thing. And a lot of other stories I've heard this week of personal tragedies. And so it's a lot to hold, you know, and sometimes there is a sense of despair that comes with that, or this inclination to check out. And our society offers us so many shiny things to look at and distract ourselves with. And I totally get that tendency. Trust me, I've been there. I have done my share of checking out because I just didn't want to experience what was going on. It can seem really overwhelming, and especially all the information we receive today on a daily basis. We probably in an hourly basis, we can receive more information than a person would in a lifetime a couple hundred years ago. I mean, if you look at papers from a couple of hundred years ago, or even 150 years ago, they were getting news 2 and 3 days later, you know, because things traveled so slowly. And gosh, 1,000 years ago, you only knew for the most part what happened in your own area. The world was, you know, there's monsters and dragons out there. We don't know what's going on out there. So this stuff that we're experiencing now is just like, I don't think our nervous system is set up to receive all of that. There's a reaction that happens. And so there's a need to take care of ourselves. And, you know, there is absolutely a need to take care of ourselves. And we also have to stay aware in whatever way makes sense for us. I keep up with what's going on in the world. I think I've cried just about every day for the last several months, even just for a second or two, because it's such a huge impact of everything that's happening. And I've been doing a lot of other reading just to broaden my understanding of things. But I also take care of myself by reading really silly murder mysteries, and watching silly TV programs with my husband, and taking walks in nature and hanging out with friends and being in community. And there's a book that I have over here that I want to read that I haven't read yet, which is called Rest is Resistance by Tricia Hersey. If you've heard, she is the NAP minister. She has what's called the NAP ministry. And really taking that rest as a serious component, a necessary component, not a luxury, but a necessity, really important. So in this recognition of how we take care of ourselves and how we work with the world, what also came up for me this week was the idea of love. And it's often not the first emotion that we experience when we're surrounded by so much awful news. There's rage, there's grief, there's anger, there's helplessness, there's anxiety, there's disgust, and so on. And these feelings can spur us to do things, to take action, to show up in ways we may not have thought of showing up before. But we're also spurred by compassion, which is a component of love. In the Buddhist teachings, there's the heart practices, or the four Brahma Viharas, the noble, the divine abodes, which is loving kindness or goodwill and compassion, appreciative joy, equanimity. So there is this important component in these teachings. And to lift up love in a time like this is incredibly important, because it's so easy to lose our awareness and lose our recognition of our shared humanity and our connection with each other. And this week, and I read a lot of books that are not necessarily, that aren't Buddhist, but I seem to always find a connection that I can apply to Buddhist teachings. Maybe it's because I'm biased, but a lot of times, a lot of the things are universal concepts that a lot of people talk about. And I read this week The Fire Next Time by James Baldwin, and it's a great book. It's small, it's easy, but it's brilliant. And he's scathing, of course, in his indictment of white supremacist culture in the U.S., but he's also adamant about the importance of love. He's adamant about that. He's not in denial. He's not a person who's living in delusion. He says, and this book was written in 1962 or published in 62, and he said, "It's scarcely worthwhile to attempt remembering how many times the sun has looked down on the slaughter of innocents." Could have been written today, with everything that's going on. But he also stresses the importance of love, and he says, "But what was the point, the purpose of my salvation, if it did not permit me to behave with love toward others, no matter how they behave towards me?" That's how we keep our humanity. He also said, "I imagine one of the reasons people cling to their hate so stubbornly is because they sense once hate is gone, they will be forced to deal with pain." And hate, anger, is an armor against feeling pain, against feeling grief. That's oftentimes the problem. There's so much pain associated with our world today that opening to it seems like insanity. We want to keep ourselves protected at all costs, which makes perfect sense. But to keep that hate going, that anger going, it's a toxic way to live and eventually causes more harm. And Baldwin said, hatred becomes too heavy a sack to carry. And the Buddha also stressed this necessity of turning towards love. As I mentioned, he talked about loving kindness and compassion. The Metta Sutta was offered as an antidote to fear. When some of his monks were gripped with terror, he said, here's the Metta Sutta, which offers loving kindness and goodwill to all beings as an antidote. Not so that others will change, but that your heart becomes softer, that you change. And then there's a famous line in the Dhammapada that says, "Hatred never ceases through hatred, only through love." That's the eternal law. And here, this is a quite a famous section of another sutta where the Buddha goes even farther, and he says, "Monks, even if bandits were to carve you up savagely, limb by limb, with a two-handled saw, he among you who let his heart get angered, even at that, would not be doing my bidding. Even then you should train yourselves. Our minds will be unaffected and we will say no evil words. We will remain sympathetic with a mind of goodwill and with no inner hate. We will keep pervading these people with an awareness imbued with goodwill and compassion and appreciative joy and equanimity. abundant, expansive, immeasurable, free from hostility, free from ill will. That's how you should train yourselves. So that is obviously someone who has become enlightened, who is awakened, not your normal run-of-the-mill us, lay practitioners. But that's, he said, once you get to, once you have really experienced and understood and penetrated the noble truths, you can be cut up and still not carry hatred in your heart. And so I'm not there. Our emotions arise. They're going to arise. We're conditioned beings, but he's pointing in a direction that we want to walk towards. Goodwill, love, not anger, not hatred. Hatred is one of the defilements that keeps us stuck in this world of dukkha, keeps us from liberation. It's getting in the way of our liberation, of our freedom. It's a huge task. And not only is it huge, but it may take years and years and years and years and years and years. Because we have these conditioned experiences. I've talked about my friend who lives in Damascus who says, no, I hate people. There are people I hate. And she's lived in civil war for years. So how, it's like she's working with what she's working with. I'm working with what I'm working with. But the teaching is, can we bring that idea of moving with love, of goodwill, of opening our hearts? Can we set an intention to move in that direction, whether there's a chance we think we have a chance we're going to get there or not? Why would we not want to move towards an open heart rather than a heart that's kind of like just so constricted with anger and hatred and rage and fury, you know? And it doesn't mean we don't take care of ourselves, because we can invite people into our hearts without inviting them into our homes, you know? We just don't shut our hearts down, because that's having no impact on them. It's having an impact on ourselves, you know? It's not easy. It's much easier to demonize people and create they and them, you know? That's the othering that leads to dehumanization, which leads to the ease of violence. You know, I feel like I talk about this all the time, but I think it's especially necessary because we are in this moment of churn and you know, the world is just screaming. It's just so loud right now. I don't know if you can relate to that, but that's how it feels like to me. It's just so loud. You know, with this onslaught of awfulness, we need to be reminded of the importance of love. You know, we need to be reminded of that. And to also acknowledge that we do have grief, you know? It's the heart's natural response to loss. And we grieve and we allow ourselves to feel the truth of our pain. And we acknowledge and we integrate the pain, and we take, and it takes courage, and that's love, you know? And Baldwin, again, another quote, he says, I use the word love here, not merely in the personal sense, but as the state of being or a state of grace. Not in the infantile American sense of being made happy, but in the tough and universal sense of quest and daring and growth. And Bell Hooks has a whole bunch of quotes around love that I really like a lot. And I'll just offer a couple of them. And she said, the moment we choose to love, we begin to move against domination, against oppression. The moment we choose to love, we begin to move towards freedom, to act in ways that liberate ourselves and others. That action is the testimony of love as the practice of freedom. We're not caught in this grip of hatred, this grip of tit for tat, of retaliation, of becoming the people we're fighting against. We rise above it because we can open our hearts. And she also said, to be loving is to be open to grief, to be touched by sorrow, even sorrow that is unending. And the Buddha said the same thing. We have to open to this. We have to recognize this. That's the first noble truth, is this recognition that there is grief, there is suffering, there is pain, there's birth, there's death, there's loss, there's all those things. You know, when the Buddha talked about love, he didn't say sing kumbaya. He said be able to be present with the full range of our experience and keeping our hearts open, imbued with these four Tibetan teaching calls them the four immeasurables, metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha, loving kindness, goodwill, compassion, equanimity. Open with that, and that allows us to hold the grief. We're not fighting against it. And he gave us a roadmap to be in community with others, you know, which is the Eightfold Path. That's how we're in community with others. The Four Noble Truths acknowledge and recognize the truth of suffering, the truth of dukkha, the truth of discontent. And seeing that this extra level of suffering is caused by our inability to be with it. But when we can be with it, we don't have to fight against anything, and there's a spaciousness that arises. And as I said, the Eightfold Path is this roadmap to live in harmony with others, especially sila, the ethical behavior aspect of it. Not to cause harm, but to cultivate compassion. Not to take what's not offered, but to cultivate generosity. It's really a practice of softening our heart. I love this line. I don't know where maybe I wrote it. I don't know. I had it in my notes, but it says, we're part of the world, not masters of it. You know, we get to coexist with each other. So one of the factors of the Eightfold Path is intention. To move through the world with a particular intention of goodwill, of compassion, of letting go of what causes suffering, of what causes dukkha, extra dukkha. And so can we, and this is, I think, what's important, even if this idea of holding love in our hearts or cultivating it is foreign and difficult, can I at least hold it in my hand out here and say, maybe that's someplace I will go to, but not just shut the door on it and say that's no. You know, allow it to hang out there. Because if you let it to hang out there, you can maybe start walking in the direction. We start where we are. We start where we are. There's no other way we can start. And so we have to start where we are. And if it's impossible or really challenging right now, hold it as an aspiration. For some point, I think it's a great aspiration. Even if it doesn't make sense in the present moment, it sounds really nice. So set this foundation of love or good, the idea of goodwill, of kindness to others, of kindness to yourself, you know, and allow yourself to come back to that foundation, because that's what we do when we practice. We come back. We come back to the foundation we're building for ourselves of equanimity, of steadiness, of what's right here, that beginner's mind, letting go of things that pull us in a bunch of directions, but just what's right here right now. So there's a steadiness, a simplicity, and let there be a grounding of kindness and compassion. And, there's another quote, Audre Lorde said, we have to consciously study how to be tender with each other until it becomes a habit. And that's true about ourselves. We have to start right here studying how to be tender with ourselves until it becomes a habit. And the more we can be tender with ourselves, the more we can be tender with others. The more compassion we have for ourselves, the more compassion we have for others. I don't know how it works, but it's been my experience, and I have no other people who say that same thing. We begin to recognize that shared humanity, that We're all in this struggling. We all have a world screaming at us, whatever our world looks like, and we each have our own world, but right now we're all getting yelled at. How do I treat ourselves? How do we treat ourselves with compassion? How do we treat others with compassion? Cultivating wisdom, clarity, cultivating compassion. And I talked about it, I think a couple of weeks ago or whenever I start where you are and what gets in the way, you know, what keeps you from moving in that direction? What keeps you from moving towards an undefended heart? Because that's what I've been looking at for the last many, many, many years, how to live with an undefended heart. And that's what this is talking about. How do I not armor myself against the world? How do I not check out? How can I be fully present with clarity, seeing really what's here, and with compassion, taking care of myself, taking care of others, but showing up how I can with the time I have, with what I can offer? That's all we can do. We can't be anything we're not. We can't show up in ways that we're not. And when I was looking at this, I remembered this quote that I saw from Neil deGrasse Tyson. And he, when we talk about our shared humanity, he has a quote that I'll read. He says, "The atoms of our bodies are traceable to stars that manufactured them in their cores and exploded these enriched ingredients across our galaxy billions of years ago. For this reason, we are biologically connected to every other living thing in the world. We are chemically connected to all molecules on Earth, and we are atomically connected to all atoms in the universe. We are not figuratively, but literally stardust." So when people say we are stardust, it sounds like some kind of woo-woo thing, but it's like, no, actually, it's literally we are, and we're all connected. Obviously, there's a huge distance between us coming from billions of years ago, but we're all interconnected. We're all dependent on each other. We are all nature. We're not separate from nature, which is sometimes the way people think. It's like there's us and then there's nature. No, we're part of it. We're just a different iteration. We're all different iterations. And so how do we develop this recognition of our connection with each other, a recognition of being part and parcel? And why wouldn't we want to show up with our relatives with love and kindness in our hearts, especially in our hearts, because we don't want to carry that hatred. That gets in the way of liberation. So I invite you, I have a couple of things here. How do we do that? Yeah, because it's easy. No, it's not necessarily easy, but see our humanity. We have to recognize each other's humanity. Watch how you dehumanize others. You know, move in that direction. What's your intention? Move in a way that cultivates this compassion, this kindness, this love. Act as if, speak as if, you know, work as if. Just act in the way, you know, practice it. Even if it's dry, even if it doesn't, there's no juice to it, just practice doing it and it becomes a new habit. And then rinse and repeat. So thank you, thank you, thank you so much, my friends. I really wish you, I wish you love in your hearts for yourselves and for each other. And thank you so much, as always, for your kind, kind, kind attention. Thank you for visiting Undefended Dharma. These teachings are freely offered. However, if you would like to make a donation to help support the technology that makes these podcasts possible, please visit marystankavich.org/support. Thank you.